Thank you very much. It's really a great honor to be speaking in memory of such a distinguished scholar. And without wanting to take too much time about that, the fact of the matter is that Dr. Kranzler entered into Holocaust studies when it didn't exist. There was no such field, and almost no one was doing academic study of the Holocaust. And also, among other subjects, illuminated the whole question of the effects of the Holocaust in the Far East and the communities, Jewish communities that were located in the Far East during in their attempt to escape the Holocaust. So it is, as I say, an honor to be speaking here this morning. So what we're going to be doing is going to be trying to cut through the fact that people come to weddings constantly. They hear somebody rattle off a text. They usually have no idea what the text is, what it really means. And yet, it's a basic foundation of our entire family structure. And furthermore, by the way, if you listen carefully, you'll also hear numerous reading mistakes by those who read it. So at least you'll come in the future having a basic understanding of what the text means. Now, I got to this subject because, to a great extent, my studies are often led by what happens to be discovered. And the now famous woman named Babata, who lived in the early part of the 2nd century and probably part of the 1st century CE, left us a ketubah, which we'll be returning to a little bit later, which was found in the Judean desert. But for now, to get the foundation of what we're doing, you've got to take a look on the back page, page 10. I suggested once to a colleague that he put his sources in the reverse order of his shiur so that nobody who got the sources could give the shiur. Now, take a look here at a few clauses from the Rambam, which are going to explain to us the basic method, so to speak, of the obligations, or the basic approach to the obligations of both sides to a marriage, which are going to be put into the ketubah. Now, so first the Rambam says in Halacha Aleph, Shanosei Adam Isha Bein Betula Bein Beula Bein Gedola Bein Kitana Achat Bat Yisrael Vachat Agioret HaMeshuchreret. If you marry any woman at all, basically no matter what she is, right? Yitchayev LaMaser Advarim Yizkeh Bahar Badvarim. He has 10 obligations to her, and he only gets 4 things. So, gentlemen, we're in trouble to start with, right? Yeah, okay. Halacha Bet Basarah. There are 3 obligations in the Torah, and they are She'irah, Kesutah, V'onatah. Now, this is generally understood to be food, clothing, and sexual relations. She'irah, right? Elu mezonoteha, that's food. Kesutah k'mishma'a means what it means, right? Meaning clothing. Onatah, lavo aleha k'derech kol ha'aretz, sexual relations, right? And as it says here, this phrase, k'derech kol ha'aretz, which is actually in Ketubah, k'orach kol ara. Says there, Me'alavataychi, which means to have relations with you, according to the way of the Torah, of the land. Vashiva midivrei sofrim, and 7 of them are rabbinic. V'chulam tanai beidinim, and all of them are tanai beidin. Now let me explain right now that the older ketubot, and you'll see this in the example of the ketubah of Babata that you have here, and the ketubot from Eretz Yisrael that were found in the Cairo Geniza, which are published in a phenomenal book by Mordechai Friedman, all of those ketubot have the Tanae Beit Din written. However, in our ketubot, the Tanae Beit Din, in many cases, well, really a whole bunch of cases, are not written. And it doesn't make a difference whether it's written in your ketubah or not. So, for example, we're going to come to the examples. Let's pick just the one of freeing one's wife from captivity. You can't say it doesn't say it in my ketubah. I don't have to do it. Because what happened is all kinds of things that they used to write in the ketubah got simply ruled as tana'im of any marriage. And therefore, no matter who or what you are, you're going to have no choice but to do what it says there. So let's see what he says over here. There are the things tana'i beit din. So he says, right, they are ha'echad mehem ikar ketubah. Now the one is the ikar ketubah, the money of the ketubah. That's the money, of course, which you promise to give in the event that the marriage ends by death or divorce. Vashar minikrim tanai ketubah. The rest of them are considered to be tanaim, and they are as follows. By the way, this question of whether the Rambam here in saying that the ikar ketubah is the Rabbanan, that's a big deal, because there is a dispute about this. But the dispute actually is maybe an overrated dispute, because with the exception of Rabbeinu Tam, any other Rishon you can mention, the Rambam, the Rif, the Ravid, the Ritva, the Rashba, every single one of them says it's the Rabbanan. And it's an argument in both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and there's not only an argument there about actually whether it's still right or the Rabbanon, but on top of that, there's even an argument about who holds which opinion, which of course always makes trouble for Psak Halacha, because if we have a majority and one individual, so we would know the Halacha goes like the majority, but what happens if we don't know who holds which opinion? Which is the opinion of the majority, which is the opinion of the individual? So we have an argument inside an argument. You understand what I mean by that? When you have that argument inside an argument, right, but the bottom line is, right, that the idea that it says there b'kan samchu, they found a remez for the ketubah in a Torah, right, from the mohar that takes place if a man seduces a girl. So from this, mikan samchu, most of the poskim reasons that it's the Rabbanan. But anyhow, the Rambam is here saying it's Rabbanan. Okay, then we go on. Vashar heim nikrim tanai ketubah, the rest of the conditions of ketubah, elhein. The rapotayim chalta, to heal her, pay her medical bills if she got sick. This was, of course, before medical insurance. Well, if dota im nishpeit, to redeem her if she got captured, to kavrak shtamut, to bury her when she dies, for the yotni zonet midichasav, that she can be sustained financially from food, from his wealth, the yoshebet veito, and to live in his house, achar moto, kozman almanuta, as long as she is a widow. That also, there's disagreement about that, but for now, leave it as is. And his daughters will be, from this woman, will be able to be also supported from his property, even after he dies, until they become betrothed. That the first, her children, her sons, should inherit her ketubah, mimenu, right, even more than the other rest of the inheritance. Let me explain that, because that means like this. A man gives his daughter a dowry. And then, besides the dowry, there's also the ketubah money itself. Now the woman passes away. The husband inherits not only the dowry, but also the ketubah money. So now he has this ketubah money sitting there in his inheritance. Now what happens if he marries another woman and has children with that woman, or he had another wife beforehand, right, when they used to have polygamy, right? So what happens then is that the money that the father-in-law gave, or the ketubah money that he promised, is going to end up in the hands of some family of people that have no relationship to the man from whom the money came, or to the woman whose ketubah money it is. And so for that reason, they made this clause, which we'll come back to later. It's called benin dichrin. That's what the husband's got to do for the woman. The things the man gets, they're also midivrei sofrim, the rabbanan. Liot masei yadea shelo, that whatever she does and she works and makes, right, he gets. Liot mitziyata shelo, if she finds something, it's his. He can get all of the, what we call in fancy words, the usufruct, that the profit from whatever she owns during her lifetime. That's the so-called nichsei tzon barzel. The property goes back to her after he dies, or goes to her estate, but nonetheless he gets a profit. V'meitu b'chayav yeshena, that he is her inheritor, he inherits whatever she has when she dies. That means not this property, but the nichsei meluk, which, right, is just regular stuff. V'hu kodem l'chol adam birusha, he comes before anyone else. They have a little bit of a rivet there, but anyhow. Halacha dalit, bo tiknu chachamim shiyu ma'aseh yedeya isha keneged mizonotea. But furthermore, the chachamim made a ruling that the way it works is that the mazon is what she gets because she works, and there are various other things that he goes through. And the point is, we'll see, we won't really need to know this right now, but there are actually circumstances in which the husband could be forgiven some of these obligations if she doesn't do the side of the obligation that she has to do. Okay, now, this is the main point in Halacha Hey. They're not written in the ketubah, which today they're not. Bafilog, or most of them. Even if there is no ketubah, Elena Sastam, he married her somehow, who knows what, there was no ketubah. Still, these are Tanai Beit Din, he gets the four things, right? Vizachata Ishan, the woman gets the Basaradvarim Shala, the Einam Trichim Lefaresh. Doesn't matter whether you explain them, you didn't explain them, they're your obligations. Okay. Now, with this, if you turn over to the Hebrew and English texts of the Ketubah, let me observe to you that on pages two following, you have the excellent systemized analysis of the Ketubah by Rabbi Maurice Lamb. I thought I would give it to you so you can take it home and read it. Besides taking home and reading it, it might help you to leaf through it a little bit and look at it as we're talking, anytime you get slightly confused where we are in the order of the ketubah. Because he did this really good job by listing all the sections of the ketubah one by one. And it's very nicely organized, it's very helpful. And so we're going to just start right out now and look at the ketubah, looking for the things that we saw and some other things. Now, first of all, of course, you know, the ketubah begins, let's say it were today, we'd say Be'echad B'Shabbat, then we would give the name of the Chodesh, and then we would give the year. Now, why do we need the date of the ketubah? The reason we need a date on the ketubah is because of the fact that the ketubah, as we're going to see, has what's called achrayut, which means that the man has mortgaged all his property to the payment of the ketubah. So then we need to know the order of mortgages on a given property. Because a person who is owed money may in fact go to a person who subsequent to his obligation purchased the property and take it away. Toreif mehalakuchot, as they say. He could take it away from the buyer who bought a property that he had a prior lien on. So we need to know the date. What's interesting about the date of the ketubah is what you see here is not the way they used to do it. Now, first of all, if you take a look over, you can't see it, but because the line, it's broken. But if you look up at the first line on page 7 of the ketubah of this famous Babta woman, or Babata, whose materials were found with the letters from Bar Kokhba, you'll see on the top just one little word that you could see. It says, Betlata Ba'adar, Al Hupatyat. It's the beginning of the word Hupatya, which is a Greek word for the consulship. So let me tell you a little something about the way they used to date ketubot. The Mishnah in Gittin Perikhet, Katav l'shum malchut she'ein hogenet. What happens if they wrote, now in this case we're not talking about a ketubah, we're talking about a get, but it's the same rules, for a kingdom that's not appropriate. For example, l'shum malchut yadai, for the kingdom of Medea, it doesn't exist anymore. L'shum malchut yavan, like for the kingdom of Greece. Levinyan abai, according to the building of the temple. L'chorban abai, the destruction of the temple. Now all these things, if you keep looking down, you'll see it's not valid. It touches document is not valid. Now, why is it not valid? It's not valid because it doesn't apply to the place you're in. However, right, it's clear that what they used to do is to date the documents according to the Roman rulers. And we see in Second Temple times the consuls. So, for example, Tosefta, based on our particular Mishnah here, says, Katav l'shem hiparchin. Hiparchin is the consulship. L'shem, and then there's a word which I think, there are different readings, is archionot, the archons, the city leaders, right? So if you did all those things, right? So, Osha Yashem Shneimel, or there were two different kings at the same time, and you write to one of them, it's Kasher. So, in other words, they used to date these things by the secular rulers. Now, after they dated it that way, once we get to the time of the Gaonim, and you see this in the Ketubot and the Kairo Geniza, they dated from what's called Minyan HaShtarot. Minyan HaShtarot, which literally means the dating of Shtarot, by all accounts, should be illegal according to what we just read in Gittin. Why? Because Minyan HaShtarot, what happened in 311 BCE, I don't know if anybody knows, is the beginning of the Seleucid era. What do we mean the beginning of the Seleucid era? The Alexander's kingdom divided up after his death, basically into, although we talk about only two of them, into four units. Two of them matter to us, the Seleucids, who ruled over Syria, that's the so-called Greeks, Yivanim Nikbetsu Alai, and the Ptolemies, who from 311 or so, the breakup of Alexander's empire, up until 198, when the Seleucids finally conquered Eretz Yisrael, the Ptolemies had ruled, the Egyptian successors of Alexander. So Minyan HaShtarot is counting from 311 BCE. Now I gotta tell you, not only is Minyan HaShtarot going on all the way in the Sephardic countries, up through modernity practically, when they also switched over to Briyat HaOlam, the way we do it, but you realize that they were counting this, there are people who want to bring it back today. I have at home a beautiful sefer about the Nusach, the Yemenite Nusach, a traditional sefer of the Yemenite Nusach of the Ketubah, and the guy says we have to bring back Minyan HaShtarot so that we're really doing it according to our Mesorah. So you imagine, the truth is it's funny because really it should not be legitimate because we just saw in the Mishnah that if you're using a Malchut She'ein HaHogenet, And the Binyan Ashtarot is the Seleucid era. So how could anybody possibly not know this? By the way, Derech Agav, if you study the Geret Rosh Shrira Gaon, which is the greatest book about the history of rabbinic literature that and all modern Jewish studies and ancient Talmudic studies is based on it. And if you study there, all the dates of all the Tanaim and Amoraim are all given about by Binyan Ashtarot. So somebody told you that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi died in 225 is because of the fact that the Rav Shira Gaon gave a date, and he always gives it always in Binyan Ashtarot. Okay. In any case, right, so we have to have a date. Good. Then we have to have a place. Laminyan Shana Monim Khan in this place. Like as it says over here, but Medina Taberakat Sfonit. Why do we need a place? The reason we need a place is because we are about to give money, monetary values. Now, the irony is there's no reason why we need it today. We're giving money now in Tyrian tetradrachmas. If we're going to give the money, Tyrian tetradrachmas, what do we need to say we're in America for? And that's another question. Because the minhag of B'nai Ashkenaz has been to render the ketubah into a basically fixed document in which nothing really matters about where you are, when you are, and what is really being given. So in the system that we have, the ketubah has been reduced to a formal item of its nature. But if you go back and you read ketubot historically, you'll find that they have real lists of what the bride is bringing in. They have real amounts that are being promised by. And I can just tell you, my daughter is married to an Israeli Taimani. And so when she got married, our mechutan called up and asked whether, I think it was 127,000 shkalim, was enough to put in for the Tosefet. They used, at least there's a zecher of the fact that once upon a time it was real. And the other thing which I'll tell you is it also says in her ketubah that he can't marry another wife. Without her permission, by the way. Without her permission. Okay, now, anyhow. Eicha chatan. Okay, so now we get to a very important point. Where are we? We're on page 2. In like the fourth line of the ketubah. Eicha chatan. Now you have to understand a very important part about all ancient contracts and especially Jewish contracts. There are two different ways to write the language of a contract, depending on what the contract is going to do. There could be a contract where the contract affects acquisition. If it affects acquisition, it will usually have a situation in which there is somebody speaking himself. Now, the ketubah is not that way. The ketubah says, we the witnesses saw X, Y, and Z. What did we see? We saw that the Chatan said A, B, and C, and after he said A, B, and C, he did the Kinyan. Now, therefore, the document that we are reading does not affect acquisition, despite the shita of some, right, that you have to actually give the document to the Kala, and some rabbis say, well, this is in case it's true that the document is used for acquisition. It's not. Now, you all know the Mishnah says that Aisha Nikdeit Mishloshad the Rachim, or Shalosh Drachim. Actually, it says in the Mishnah. I just corrected the Hebrew to the gender, but it says Mishalosh, right? Because actually, the word Derech is, it says Shloshah. I'm going back the wrong way. It says Shloshah for us in the Bible. When modern Hebrew follows the Bible, Shalosh, Derech is feminine. But it was either one, as the Gemara points out there. So anyhow, Haisha Niknate Bishlosha Drachim, and one of them is Bishtar. But that's not this star. That's the star that says, Hareyat Mikudeshit Li Bishtar Zeh. And when the star is handed over in front of the 8A Mesira, like Lahavdil Get, then you have Kiddushin. And of course, that was used when someone was marrying someone at a great distance and they weren't going to make the trip if they weren't really, really betrothed. But anyhow, so the point is, when it says Eich, it means, as you find in some ketubot say, Anan Sahadeh, we are witnesses, Eich. That's what the word Eich is doing there. Right? So, what's going on here now? Eich. Right? So, Amalat, right? So, Eich, Chatan, so-and-so, ben-so-and-so. Amalat, Lahadabatulti, he said to this virgin, obviously, the way we do it, if it's a giyoret or if it's a divorcee, it's stated in the ketubah. Sometimes it's not read out loud. You know, there's a tshuva of Moshe that if you have a situation where you don't want to read what it says in the ketubah, like if a 23-year-old girl was married, you know, for 3 months and she's getting married again, they won't necessarily read the real ketubah. What they read is they'll say, as if she wasn't married, they read another ketubah, but the one that they signed is accurate. Or in situations like that. I mean, widows, no one really is worried about that, but it happens every once in a while. Or if someone converts and they don't want to make a big deal about it, they don't read the real one. But anyhow, so what does he say? He says, Havi Lila Intu. Now, Havi Lila Intu means you should be, an Intu is not a wife.
A wife is ita, depending on what dialect you have, or there's assimilated nun for the dagesh and the tav, ita. So into is wifehood. Now you know the earliest ketubot we have are from Elephantine, where in the 6th and 5th centuries BCE there was a Jewish military colony, which was at a place, Elephantine, which is also called Yev, also it's called Aswan. It's an island that is today submerged because of some dam that was built in the Nile River. But anyhow, these ketubot already use this phrase. These ketubot are not really in accord with our understanding of halakha, but the basic phrase, havi li le'intu, which means you should be in the status to me of wifehood. That's what the ooh is at the end, okay? So it indicates that it's an abstract noun. As opposed to nusachaot that say, havi li le'ita, you should be a wife. Okay. In any case, it's going to mean the same thing, except it's just the grammar. Now, immediately he says, kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. So there are a number of possibilities of what this means. The dominant view of commentaries on the Ketubah, you might not realize that there actually are commentaries on the Ketubah, is that this refers to the following problem. It refers to when the Mishnah discusses the fact that ve'eli yotzot shelo b'ketubah, if a woman violates certain things, she can be divorced without getting the money back of the Ketubah money. However, al dat Moshe, one who violates the law of Moshe, v'yehudi, and one who violates the, let's call it, law of the Jewish woman. Bezui dat Moshe. What's dat Moshe? Machilato sheinu musar. She gives him food from which tithes weren't taken. Humesham mashato nida. She has relations with him when she's a nida. Velokotza lachala, she doesn't separate chala. If you go through the list, it means this. It means that the woman lies to her husband and says, this food's kosher and it's treif. Or I'm kosher and I'm treif. That's dat Moshe. What's dat Yehudi? Which is apparently what they mean here when they say kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. So, yotza v'rosha perua. She goes out with her hair uncovered. Vitova b'shuk, or she actually does weaving in public in such a way as people can see her arms, because when you weave, apparently, your arms go like this, and they have loose clothes, and they come down on your arm. Umidaberetim called down, she speaks it with anybody. The commentaries add in a way which is inappropriate, because they don't understand otherwise what's wrong. And so it goes on with various other interpretations. So these are behavioral issues of proper, modest Jewish behavior. So most of the commentaries think that that's what it means when it says what it says here. Okay, so that is, now he starts to state his obligations. Ana eflach, I will work or serve. V'okir, and respect. V'ezon, and I will provide food. V'afarnes, I will provide sustenance, but we generally take that to mean clothing. Yatichi lichi, you. And then it goes on, Kihilchot Guvern Yudan Defalchon, we'll go back to that in a minute, just repeats the whole thing, right? But anyhow, so let's see what these things are. So among the obligations the husband has taken on to the wife, Eflach. So this means that he's going to work to support her. And even if it means that he has to turn himself into a slave, he is going to support her. And then, V'okir, I will respect her. Respect for one's wife is considered one of the things that she's entitled to by the ketubah. The A zone, we already know that. That's the mizonot. Vafarnes. So you have here some of the sheirak sutav onata. You have, that's to say, the food and clothing part, to which has been added the respect and the willingness to do, you know, anything he has to do for his obligation. Okay. So yatichi lichi is actually, it looks like a double thing, because in yat is the direct object pronoun in Eretz Yisrael Aramaic, and that's where the ketubah originated. There are little snippets of it in the Gemara. There's no ketubah given in the Gemara, right? Not in the Bavli, not in the Yerushalmi. There's no whole text. There's just snippets. But anyhow, when they discuss the halachot, they give you the snippets. But anyhow, lichi is the Babylonian Aramaic way of doing direct object. So it looks to me like you got two direct objects in a row here, yatichi lichi. You could say that yatichi is the direct object followed by indirect object, which would mean for your benefit. So in other words, I will do all these things for you, comma, for your benefit. But I think that that is just a way of, you know, smoothing over the fact that it's two direct object pronouns in a row. Ki hilchot guvrin yudayin defalchin umokrin is according to the laws of the Jewish men, the defalchin umokrin Bizan and Afarnasin, who do these four things, Linesheon for their wives, Bekushta, faithfully. Bekushta literally means the truth, but it doesn't mean the truth. It doesn't mean, I promise you that when I go out to earn a living to support you, or even better, that if I give you a dress, which I have to do, right? A Farnes, right? That I'm not going to give you one with a fake label in it. That's not what he means by Bekushta. Bekushta means faithfully, I'm going to do this. It doesn't mean honestly, it means faithfully. Now, but you know that word from Brich Shmei, right? Okay, Unviyoi Kishot, his prophets are true. Now, but what is this business about Kihilchot Guvrin Yudayin? Meaning it's a halachic obligation. And of course, you all know that the way Judaism works, obligations which are personal or even emotional may be stated as halachic. And that's what's going over here. You're going on over here. We're acting like this is a legal contract, but of course it's not. Now, if you look at the beginning of Kiddushin, the beginning of Kiddushin, the first couple of pages, everybody says they come from the Savoraim. They're the latest layer of the Gemara. And Rav Yehudai Gaon is quoted by the Ritva and some others as saying that this comes from the Savoraim, who are the latest stage in the development of the Gemara. And the other big passage of the Savoraim that everybody knows, because they skip it, is the beginning of Psachim, until it says Vahashta, now that we know that Or means Orta, means evening, then let's go. Then everybody who learns Psachim, except for the Daf Yomi, skips it. But if you look at the first pages of Kiddushin, I, by the way, remember skipping it with the Rav. Skipping it. He skipped it. Everybody skips it. But if you look at the page of the Kiddushin, what you see is going on there, is besides the grammar of Shlosha, Shalosh, Derech, masculine, feminine, there's a whole discussion there that intends to tell you that the Kinyan, the legal thing, isn't what marriage is about. And that despite what you might mistakenly believe, that it's a business deal, it's not. And that's what much of that whole thing is, before you start Kiddushin, so you should know that. So anyhow, that's the point here, we're expressing in halachic terms. So you have to fulfill all these laws. Okay. Now, then it continues. V'yahivna, which means I am giving you, not I have given, I am hereby giving you. V'yahivna lichi, and I am giving to you, Mohar betulaichi, I am giving you the mohar of your being a betulah. The mohar of you being a betulah is 200 zuz according to the Mishnah. And this is precisely the ketubah money. Now you know the mohar from the Torah. The Torah only discusses the mohar in the example of the discussion of what happens if a man seduces a girl. But basically, that's why Chazal only said, Mikan Samchu. From this, they find the remez that the ketubah is 200 zuz, because 50 shkalim is 200 zuz. Now, in on the back somewhere of your handout, let me see, right? You should have here, right, the Mishnah, on the top of page 9, Lo katav la ketubat betulah. If he didn't write the specifics like we see here, go v'matayim, she gets matayim 200 anyhow, but almana maneh, and an almana widow gets 100. Shu tanai they did. But the point I'm making to you is that this is the mohar. The mohar is what we call the ketubah. That's the money that the woman gets no matter what. This is the ikar ketubah. That's what's called ikar ketubah. That's what we saw before in the Rambam. This is the ikar ketubah. Now, you also have to know about the ikar ketubah, that this is the money which in a Jewish marriage is not really transferred. So let me explain. There is a whole discussion in the Mishnah of the Gemara. Once upon a time, at the very beginning, when they wanted to protect women, what did they do? They actually had money deposited. That means that the ketubah money was actually transferred from the husband to the family of the girl. And then they had this money. And then if the marriage ended, they had the money. And if that was what it was. However, what happened then, and this is the big takana of Shimon ben Shetach, the big takana of Shimon ben Shetach, and if you see, the simplest and most direct statement of it is in the Tosefta, and the takana of Shimon ben Shetach was simply to say that, here we is, Barishanak Shtat Ketubah Teitz Levi, at the beginning, the ketubah was actually physically deposited the money, the Ikar Ketubah, the 200 zuz, with the father of the girl. So it was very easy to divorce the woman because he said, go home and get the money. Don't bother me. Hitkin Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach said, this is no good. He said, no, it shouldn't be that way. It should be held in the husband's own pocket. Because when you signed your ketubah, you didn't give a check. Okay? No check, right? Why? Here's what he says. And he writes to her, all of your the property which I have is mortgaged to this ketubah.
So the big chiddush of Shimon ben Shetach, who is known as the originator of the ketubah, is not to originate the institution of the ketubah. That existed long before. His chiddush was to turn the ketubah into a mortgage from a payment. So what happened? It's the end of the process of paying for a girl, the bride price. Once upon a time, there was a real bride price. If you go back to the ancient Near East, before there was a Jewish people, there was a bride price. The Jews started at the beginning, it's a bride price, the Mohar. What's the difference between Mohar and Ketubah? Mohar is still a bride price, even though we call it Mohar here, in the Torah. That means you're giving money to get the girl, right? But Ketubah is a mortgage. Okay. The other thing you have to know is that there are two kinds of societies. Societies where the woman pays the man to marry her, and societies where the man pays the woman's father to marry his daughter. We have both. The Nedunya we're going to see in a minute is the money the girl brings. So what we have, the Jewish people, has a mutuality. That's not some kind of apologetics, by the way. You know what I learned? I learned from an article in Nashim, which is a moderate Jewish feminist magazine. Right? That's the truth. It's a scholarly journal, feminist scholarly journal. It's a great point. She quotes all kinds of anthropologists, and it's right, because the point is we have both things together, because for us it's mutual. Now back to the text. So, the Ahivne, I hereby give you the Mohar Betulaisi. And what is it? It's Kesef Zuzei Matan, 200 zoos. That's denarii. The Roman denarius is a zoos. The Chazi Lichi Midoraita, which is deserving to you. Aha, wait a minute. Minatorah, what about Minatorah? So this is, we just said before, that the majority view is Ketubah is not Minatorah, right? So some Nuschaot in the Ketubah don't say Midoraita. So there are various excuses for why we say Midoraita. Excuse number one, the Ketubah holds it's Doraita. Like the view in the Gemara and the minority view of Rabbeinu Tam. Explanation number two. The reason why it says Doraita is because we want to make the man really scared if he messes up on this stuff. And so we tell him it's a Torah law. The other possibility is that what we mean, Midoraita, is, well, you know, the Torah describes a Mohar. And even though this isn't exactly the same thing, it starts from the Torah. So there's three different ways of studying Doraita. It means really Doraita. It means scare the Baal. Or it means that Doraita means what was appropriate in the days when they did it in the Torah way. Anyhow, we have a Mohar, whether it's Doraita or not. We have a Mohar that he's promised, and he hasn't had to deliver 1 cent, right? So he's just made a mortgage. And what is the Chazi Lichi Midoraita? And furthermore, right, I've also promising to give Umizonaichi, Ksutaichi, Vesipukaichi, to give. First are the things we've mentioned before, your food and your clothing, Vesipukaichi, whatever you need. So that's what we already saw before. But this is basically Sheirak Sutav Onata. Because now, Umeyal Levataichi. Meyal is from the Shorish Alal, which means to enter, and which means to have sexual relations. Umeyal Levataichi, Ka'orach Kolara. We saw the Rambam took those words. He said, Kederach Kolaretz. It's, by the way, in one of the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's talking about people who marry. Vaholidu Banim, Kederach Kolaretz. It's the same expression. So anyhow, right, Ka'ora Kolara. Good. So far, if you were following along a little in the Maurice Lamb thing that I gave you that I said you should take home and read, you'll see that we're now up to the point where we're now going to state, the Baal stated his basic points, we're now going to state the basic facts about the Kala, for whom, and this is very important, Utsviat Marat so-and-so Betul Tada, this woman wants Bahavat Leila into to become in the status of wifehood with this man. Because we all know the halacha that no girl can be married if she doesn't want to, right? We have to bring the na'arav in ishalat piya, as it says in the Torah, right? You can't be married against your will in halacha. Okay. Now, so therefore we need the statement that this woman, right, who we said before was a betula, wants v'havat leila into to be this man's wife. Okay. Now the next problem is, besides, it's one thing for her to say she wants to be the wife, but she has to also bring stuff into the marriage. And that's what comes now. V'dein nidunya d'hananat levi be'avua. And she is bringing with her this nidunya. The nidunya, known in sort of Yiddishized Hebrew as a nadam, is the money which the girl brings. So,
Where are we over here? Right. So v'dein nedunya d'hanan alatlei mi be'avua, that she brought, right? Mi be'avua, from the house of her father. If her father's dead, they usually write be'nasha, which ironically is a word that we don't even know what it means. Right? But some say it's a word for a widow, but you don't find it in any dictionary. But anyhow, mi be'nasha, ben ksaf ben b'zahav ben b'tachshitin, whether it is any of the following things, kesef, zahav, silver, gold, tachshitin, b'mani d'levusha, and clothing, b'shimush dira, equipment for the house, or b'shimush d'arsa, shimush d'arsa means the bed goods, right? They call it in Yiddish bed gevant, right? That's the Yiddish, right? What do they call it it's all the linens, right? Hakol kibel alav. Now, what do you mean hakol kibel alav? So, a lot of people don't understand what this means. Hakol kibel alav is going to describe the fact that there is an obligation of the chatan for this property. Now, I have to explain that in a minute. Chatan dinan, this chatan, he has accepted it, b'meyas kukim kesef tsaruf, as being worth 100 of this kesef tsaruf, of this silver coins, which are refined. Now, the point of this is that there is property that the woman brings in, which the husband is required to return in the same condition. That's what's called nichsei tzon barzel. Now, he may never return it, in fact, because they could be married to the end of their life, and who knows what happens to the old stuff that she brought when she was born. But there's also nichsei malug. So nichsei malug, in the car this morning, I gave my wife an example of nichsei malug. Right? If the wife shows up in the marriage with a pad of paper as one of her possessions, and they use up the pad, right, the husband has no responsibility to return the pad to the wife. Right? But in the dunya, he has a responsibility to maintain in the same condition, and if the marriage ends, to furnish it or the monetary value of it in return. Okay. So, Hakol Kibir B'Lav so-and-so, so Chatan Dinan B'Meyah Zekukim Kesef Tsaruf, he values it as 100 Zekukim. Now, in addition, Vitzave so-and-so, Chatan Dinan, this Chatan Plony wants, V'Hosif Lamin Delay Od Meyah Zekukim Kesef Tsaruf, Acherim Kinegdan. Now, this is a minhag of a Tosefet Nedunya, that the Chatan always adds to the Nedunya a certain amount, which he, in our case, usually the minhag is to double. In other words, even though I say you only brought X in, I'm doubling the amount. Now, some say that this is for kavod. In later halachic sources, it's a discussion of whether you have to return the original amount or the doubled amount. And there were communities when it was by four. And there were different minhagim because they wanted everyone to think how happy they were to get married. But in anyhow, right, that's the way it works. Okay. And comes up to 200. V'chach amar. Now comes the statement on the part of the chatan that everything is mortgaged to his obligation to the ketubah. V'chach amar sploni chatan dinan achrayut shtar ktub teda, that I take on myself achrayut. Now that's very important because that means that he's mortgaging. So we may as well mention right now, we're going to see it in a few minutes. The original achrayut could only be for karkaot, for real property. And the problem is at the time of the Gaonim, Jews didn't have real property anymore. Imagine today if you try to mortgage something to the real property of Jews. And many, many Jews have no real property. So as a result, they had to add also mitaltalin. By the way, the word is not mitaltalin, it's a chirik. It's mitaltalin because the tav of the hifil has been absorbed into the tet. Mitaltalin, not mitaltalin, right? You have to know the difference, you know, of all these forms. Like, but I'll tell you a joke about this. Some rabbi told me this joke. A guy asked him whether somebody was a real Mekubal. So he said, I don't know if he was a real Mekubal, but he's a real Makabel. So for this, you have to know your Binyanim. If you don't know your Binyanim, I heard this joke. I can't remember who told me that. Someone told me on Eliezer at the well. We need a little break here. We're halfway through the Ketubah. So Eliezer at the well, he really wanted to know if she knew Dikta. So the first thing, he asked her the question in a way that she would have to prove that she knew that there's no hifil of shatah, and you have to say gam gamalech ashke. So he saw, she knows the hifil. But he was worried that maybe she's a glitziana. So he asked and says, yesh makom lalin. And she correctly responded, lalum. So he realized that she's not a glitziana. And then he said, okay, don't, no one should be offended. That's the joke I heard. And then he said, I see, otahu chachta, that she's the right wife, because she really knows Hebrew and knows dikta. Okay. Now,
Anyhow, so he added this basically in Kesachim Kol Kibbutz, and then it says V'achriv V'kafakach Amar Chatan Dinan. Remember what I told you, that this is all repetition of what the Chatan said, right? In front of the Beit, in front of the Eidim. So he said Achrayut Shtar Ketub Tada, that the guarantee land, the lien on my land for this ketubah, in the dunya day, end of the dunya, if it's a sefta da, and the extra amount that I accepted, kabalit alai, I have accepted on me, the ayatai batrai, and also on my, those who are going to be my inheritors, lehit param in kol shvar arag nichsin, to collect it from any of the best of my property, vikinyanin, and things which I own. You get this? Not only real property, but also, right, the property which is metaltalin. To eat li tichot kol shmaya, anything which I own under this, under right? The knaiv datida na lemikna, whether I own it now or I'm going to buy it later on. Now, let me explain what's important here. It's obviously important, anything I'm going to buy later on. But everybody understands that. The part that people don't understand is, what is business about al yartai and my inheritors? So let me explain. There's something called matanat shchiv mara, that a person who's dying is allowed to direct what's going to happen to his property. So he's guaranteeing in the ketubah that no direction could take place of what is going to happen with the ketubah money that will alienate it from the inheritors, who in turn will be obligated to pay it to the wife. Okay? That's the point. So he's canceling in advance his ability to use a shchiv, matanat shchiv mara, to somehow get his wife. And in his last days, who knows whatever, they had a fight in the hospital, right? He's on, you know, some type of a respirator, but they had a fight. He doesn't want his wife to inherit him. So it's impossible to do this. He can't take the ketubah money away from her. Okay, then, nechasim de'it lahon achrayut v'leit lahon achrayut. That means, whether it is the type of property on which you can put a lien, you know from studying Gomorrah, that means karkaot. Or whether it's mitaltalin, the late luach rayut. Why? Because the whole thing in the modern ketubah from the Middle Ages, from the time of the Gaonim on, the ketubah forces you to use even movable property as a guarantee on the loan, even though normally you could not have done that. Kulon yahon achrayin v'arbavin. So these are all mortgaged and pledged. So the Mefarshim, despite the fact that you saw in the Mishnah, I don't know if you noticed it a minute ago when I read you the Mishnah, that you saw that it was the guys Achray, both, you know, Achrayin v'Arba'in are both in the Mishnah, right? Despite that fact, the modern Perushim read in here Achrayut on the land, Arba'in, right, pledged on the real property because of the differences between these. Okay, now. So he continues over here. To pay all this money back, the money of the ketubah, the ikar ketubah, and the dunya dain, and this, the money that I owe her, if there is involved nichsei tzon barzel that she brought into the marriage, which are listed, by the way, in the old ketubah, were really listed. It's listed. You wouldn't believe what's listed there. One sweater, one cooking pot. It's all listed. Everything she brought in. So he's responsible for that. Vitosef da, and what was added, minai, and I have to pay this from my own self, vathilu min glimada katfai, and even if it costs me the shirt off my back, which would be impossible in the days of the Mishnah because it's not real property, right? Okay. Then, right, bechayayu vatar chayay, it's a repetition of what we said before, min yoma dinanu la'alam, from now and forever. Okay. Now he makes a closing declaration, because there is a rule in halacha that at the end of a contract you repeat the basic ikar in order to make sure that conditions spelled out in the middle cannot be misunderstood as canceling the basic requirements. So v'achrayud v'chom eshtag tup tadat, the responsibility, the lien on my property to pay according to a strict interpretation of the conditions of this ketubah, nedun yedain, my obligation for what she's brought into the marriage, the nedunya, Vitosef the da, and the fact that I added a sum to the dunya amount, kibel alav, this has been accepted upon himself, chatan dinan. Now the Eidim are describing. We finished quoting the chatan. We also had the statement that the woman accepts. Now we return to quoting the chatan, and now we have the Beit Din talking again, as they were in the very first lines. Like the detailed rules of all of contracts of ketubot, vitosefto, and added things,
which are the minhag with Benot Yisrael, which hints at what we said before, that the fact that something's not listed here, you're still obligated. All the Tanai Beit Din, we're going to see, they used to write. Hasuyim v'tigun chachamim zichron levracha, which are done according to the ways the chachamim required. Delak asmachta lo tetofsi d'shtari. Now, what is that? An asmachta is something I think is never going to happen. So I therefore don't have any real, that's why they say that, for example, if you gamble, the guy's convinced he's going to win, and you take his money because he lost, it might be stealing. Because it's asmachta, because he's convinced that he's going to win. So therefore, he didn't go in, there is no dot makne that he intends to transfer the money when he goes and sits down at the table to play the game. Now, that's the situation here. It has to be very clear that the chatan understands that it's highly likely, certainly, that he'll die before his wife. And since that's a highly likely possibility, then he has to be prepared to understand that the payment really will take place. If he thinks this is never going to happen, what do I care? She'll die first, I'll inherit her. Right? Then it's an asmachta. It has to be that he understands he's really... that this is not like some document filled out, as if we're filling it out only to practice learning how to make documents or prepare them in advance to sell them, that this is a real document that I take seriously. Vikanina, and the Beis Din continues, and we made the kinyan, which you know is the kinyan chalifin, known in yeshivish as chlipin, which is the exchange of some handkerchief or some other item in order to symbolize this, right? From, we took it from this guy, Chatan so-and-so, the Marat, to make a kinyan on behalf of Marat so-and-so. Most people do not send the handkerchief to the Kala. Some Hasidim do, but most people do not. Betul Tadam, Kuma de Katubim before Rosh, everything which is mentioned above. The Mana de Kashil Mikneveh, and we did it with an item which it's permissible to make a transfer with, because you know you can't use payrot. Can't use fruit. Somebody, let's say you're at this wedding and they don't have a handkerchief, so I got a great idea. There's a cake on the table. Pick up the cake. You can't do it. It's got to be a permanent object. There are a number of types of objects that are forbidden. So it has to be mana de kasha l'miknebeh. Then what's a kol shavira kayam? Every Jewish contract requires on the end that there be a way of saying the contract's finished. So anything that appears below it, before the signatures, which is supposed to be very close, is considered illegitimate. And therefore, you write a kol shariva kayam to say, we're at the end of the document. Okay. Now this is going through our document. However, I mentioned to you that the Nuskaot of Eretz Yisrael was somewhat different, and so I gave you here, on page 7 and 8, the ketubah of this woman from the early 2nd century. So we're going to stop in about, I guess we start a little late, so we'll stop in maybe 5 minutes and then take questions, right? Sound good? Okay. Now, what I want to show you about this ketubah is how the various clauses that are called, this is page 7, the thing that came out a little light, the various clauses that are called Tanai Beit Din used to be written in the ketubah. Now, first of all, at the beginning of this document, you'll see it starts out, just you can't read the beginning, the names and all this, but in line 4 we find out that the Kala was from En Gedi, which we know because she owned a lot of property in En Gedi. We have a lot more of her documents. Now, and he said to her, either to Tavainli or Havili, into, and something about or Leinta, we don't know because we're not sure, Kedin Moshe V'Yudai, according to Jewish law. Okay, and then he says, Vizalach, I will provide, we're in line 5, I will give you sustenance, Umichasach, I'll give you clothing, V'Yaveinolach, and I give you B'Moharach, I'm giving you your ketubah money, U'Viktuvteich, Al-Kha, I will give it to you, V'Kim Alai, and I take upon myself the obligation, Kesef Zuzei Arba Me'ah, of 400, Ma'inun Surin, that is Kes in Me'ah, which is 100 in the Tyrian type money. Okay. And then it goes on like this, and the point that I really want to point out to you here, for the interest of time, is when the Tanai Beit Din starts. Look in the end of line 13. Binan Nakban. Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I went too low. Starting in 10. The Im Tishtabai, if you will be captured, Afrikinach, Min Beiti, I will free you from my own funds, Min Nichsai. I will return you to me as a wife. And your obligation of the ketubah will still be upon me once this happened. I won't deduct it from your ketubah money. That money is still in here. Then, Binan Nukban, the female children, Teveyatfa Umitzanan Mindeiti, and this is in the Mishnah, you see this, right? It's on the back, the Mishnah Ketubot, we might not read it. Yeh will live on the expenses from my house, Umin Nichasai, Adzman Yitnasvan Leba'alin, until they get married. That means even after I die. And then, the imana hachlevet olmi kadamach, if I die before you, you, Tehe, Yadva, may live, umitzanan, and be sustained, min beiti, from my household, min nechasai, from my property, adzman di yitzvun yartai, until my children will want, lemintan, my inheritance, lemintan lach kesaf ketuvteich, to give you the money from your ketuvah. And whenever you, then there's a very interesting clause that if you ask me for a replacement because this was lost, the document, in all these ancient documents, there's a line which does not exist in our ketubot. If you lose it, I'll give you another one. There's something called ketubah de irshasa, which is the ketubah that says these people came before the Beit Din, they said they lost their thing, and they got married on such and such a day. It exists today. I saw one on a wall. Actually, I saw it twice. I was at somebody's house, and they had a ketubah on the wall, very distinguished rabbi's child. Ketubah on the wall, and you couldn't read the signatures. I said, hey, you can't read the signatures. What are you doing? Ah! He went upstairs. He brought me down the ketubah of the Irkasa. But once I was in a friend's house, he says, we had the ketubah of our great-grandparents. Oh, interesting. It's on the wall. I read it. I said, this is the ketubah of the Irkasa. They lost their ketubah. So this was made afterwards. Also, right, what I want you to notice, so all these tana'im that we just mentioned, you will find on page 1, starting very quickly in on the top of, I'm sorry, page 9. On page 9, you'll find in Mishnah Chet that yeah, if he didn't write, he'll free her. She still has to free her. Then you'll find if he didn't write that the male children born to you inherit from me your ketubah, which guarantees that your money doesn't go to some other family members, right? And then also the Benin Dichrin clause, that, right, that's the one we just said, your sons will inherit in Mishnah Tet, Mishnah Yud Benan Nukban, that all these clauses are in the old Palestinian Eretz Yisrael Ketubot that found the Kairo Geniza, because that was the new stuff in Eretz Yisrael. So what I hope you will go out with here is a sense of what this document really means when you heard it read. Unfortunately, today we hear it read incorrectly more and more and more, and that's a problem which I don't really know what to do about, because any rabbi can get Hamadrich, which tells them in the back how to read it with fairly reasonable, accurate vowels, but for some reason the people who don't know how to read are the ones who purposely use the copies without vowels. I haven't been able to figure this out, why people who can't read get a Mishnah Brura without vowels. And the people who can read get a Mishnah Brura with vowels. I don't understand that, but some will explain. So in any case, I just want to close with the one statement that we all have to remember all the time, that Judaism defines many personal and ethical issues as if they're laws, not to cloud out the personal, emotional, and ethical, but to provide a base to make it possible. And that's what the ketubah has been for, of course, thousands of years now. And I think, as you see when you look at it, that its clauses are very detailed, but they have as their ultimate purpose that type of guarantee of an understanding of what marriage is really supposed to be. So thank you very much. We have a few minutes for questions. Yeah?
Two questions. One, I was told, and I can't find a lot of reason for it, that if a woman loses a ksuba, that the married couple can live together.
Right. That's halacha. The reason for it, you couldn't find it. I saw it in about 4 places when I was preparing. It's in the Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Rambam, right? I think it's in the Mishnah too, right? You have to have a ketubah, and the reason you have to have a ketubah is because, yeah, here's the question. If you hold a stel raisa, then it's an obvious one. You're not allowed to have relations if you're not married. You're not married. You don't have a ketubah, you're not married. If you hold that it's a protection for women, then Chazal simply decided that it is just totally unacceptable that a woman and a husband and wife will be having their life as a husband and wife when this woman does not have this guarantee. So she should just immediately say, we got to get it today, right? And since you can get one in one day, it's no big deal, right? But that is the halacha, that's correct. Second question?
The second question is, if you have a ksuba, and now the parties get together and they want to write a completely different thing. quote a prenup that knocks everything out.
Post-nup.
Post-nup.
You mean in a halachic suba, you have a suba, so what, you wouldn't do that. You would just write another contract.
But can you?
It depends what you want to do. You can't write a contract that will overturn the obligations of the one that you have.
Even if the two people agree to it?
I don't. This is the problem of Tanai Beit Din. There are certain, the woman can say, we know, this is a whole complicated business. The woman can say, I don't want to work in the house, and you don't owe me any food, because I have my own money, and I'll pay for all that, and don't worry about it, right? Like a woman who works and says, don't ask me to cook. I'm paying, I'm bringing home $100,000 a year. I'm not cooking, right? She can say that, and you can agree to that. But you can't agree that you're not going to, let's say, give an example, that I'm not going to take care of you if you get sick. But you can, under certain circumstances, divorce her. Okay? So it depends on what the conditions are that you want to change.